Dhanyavad Abhishek. Thank you, Abhishek. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the most happening place on the planet. And this Holy Thursday is still on. It is the day of Ugadi, the Telugu New Year's Day, and lots of devotees from Andhra Pradesh have gathered here to celebrate the New Year in the Divine Presence to make their start on this year a very sacred and memorable occasion. There were programs in the morning and in the evening today, lovely festive atmosphere in the Divine Hamlet. And even as I was enjoying every moment of this joyous occasion in Prashanthi Nilayam, my mind went back to what I shared with you at the same time the previous week, in the last episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. We discussed about Shivam, Bhagwan's sublime abode in Hyderabad. Well, it was only the beginning of a series that we are going to have on Shivam, because there is so much to share about this edifice shaped in the form of a beautiful lingam standing gloriously in the heart of Hyderabad. And towards the end of that discussion last Thursday, April 4th, I mentioned how Baba in the 70s used to make it a point to be in the capital of Hyderabad in Shivam for every Ugadi. In fact, from 1973 to 1979, he spent every Ugadi in Hyderabad. And the most important thing about these visits is the discourses that Bhagwan delivered in each of these occasions. In 1973, for instance, Baba said, "May this new year bring you all happiness. You can get true happiness only by serving the poor and the handicapped and those working very hard to make their ends meet. I always give importance to service as sadhana. Sacrifice your ego. Achieve harmony in thought, word and deed. Offer pure actions, thoughts and words at the divine lotus feet. That is true surrender. And when God accepts that surrender, you will have His grace flowing onto you. That will improve your relationship with God. Love God. Experience His love." This is what Swami said in 1973. And in 1979, Ugadi, Swami said, "Man has achieved so much progress physically and scientifically, but he has fallen morally. He is sliding down due to his egoism. And what is the cause of this fall? Selfishness, ignorance and avidya." Avidya is absence of wisdom. And Swami went on to add, "Those who seek the joy of liberation should burn this selfishness in the fire of jnana, in the fire of spiritual wisdom. Otherwise, there is no future." Let me repeat that. "Those who seek the joy of liberation should burn this selfishness, this avidya, in the fire of jnana, in the fire of spiritual wisdom. Otherwise, there is no future." This is what Bhagwan said in 1979 on the occasion of Ugadi, this auspicious day, almost more than 3 decades ago. So what Bhagwan was emphasizing is that to get rid of greed, to get rid of selfishness and desire, anger and so on, it is so important for us to strive towards jnana, towards spiritual wisdom. Once there is a greater understanding of the fundamental principles of life, there is less confusion and delusion in our minds. And when there is less delusion and less illusion in our minds, there is more peace and bliss in our hearts. This is a journey. Journey from avidya to vidya. From ignorance to enlightenment. In fact, dear listeners, this is what we will be discussing tonight. how to move towards light and wisdom, how to slowly get rid of ignorance and darkness, what is the way forward and how to tread this path. This is a very difficult and complex subject, yet it is very, very important. It is very essential for us to understand, at least to some extent, what is the fundamental principle governing our lives and what is that one secret of creation that we should always keep in mind so that we never ever get confused and deluded as we carry on with our earthly sojourn. But before we start this discussion, let us first offer our most loving and reverential salutations at the lotus feet of the one who is the Master Supreme, the only permanent entity of this universe, the only goal worth attaining in our lives. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we work diligently towards removing this darkness of Maya, this illusion of worldly desires, pleasures and achievements, and constantly strive to see you in everything we do, to constantly envision you in everything we see, and constantly offer and surrender to you every little act we do. Please be with us, Lord, and guide us. With this prayer, let's move on and welcome dear listeners to this Thursday live broadcast and to this segment Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And today we have a session of Radio Sai Study Circle. I'm Team Radio Sai's Vishu, and as we have for every session of Radio Sai Study Circle, we have four other former students of Bhagwan's University discussing in the studios of Radio Sai. Actually, we recorded this session just a couple of days ago. So here is Radio Sai Study Circle on the theme Asatoma Sadgamaya. Lead me, Lord, from darkness to light.
ईश्वराय विद्महे सत्यदेवाय धीमहि तन्नः सर्वप्रचोदयात्। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to the 9th episode of Radio Sai Study Circle. We are embarking on this after a break of almost a couple of months, and we are really grateful to Bhagwan for making it possible for the entire team to meet again in the Radio Sai studio. In the previous session, we had a discussion on sadhana, what is sadhana, the process of sadhana, and the critical success factors to ensure that we are on the path of sadhana, on this path of spiritual refinement. And the way we did it last time is we culled out interesting and insightful analogies and examples that Bhagwan has given in his numerous discourses all these years while explaining this concept of adhering and being persistent on the spiritual path. And today too, we are going to follow the same approach of taking another basket of Bhagwan's simple yet profound similes and stories and discuss another important spiritual concept that Bhagwan laid a great stress on right from the time he began delivering his messages. So what is the topic for today? Well, I will leave that for the coordinator of the study circle, Mr. G.S. Srirangarajan, to reveal that for us. But before I hand over the mic to him, dear listeners, I want to take this opportunity to thank you sincerely for all the encouraging comments that we have had since we aired the previous study circle. And for that matter, since the time we have started this series on Radio Sai. Just to give you a sample of one or two, Ms. Jyoti from Vancouver, Canada, wrote to us saying many times she has to walk to her work because of non-availability of car, and even though she has knee problems and experiences a lot of pain when she has to walk for more than 10 minutes, listening to these study circles has made her forget her excruciating pain while walking. And in the end, she adds, I am sure there are many like me who may be writing a feedback only once in a blue moon, or maybe not at all. But please know that every single day we hear Radio Sai or read Science Fairs or watch these videos, we feel so inspired. Then there is another listener, Miss Saju, who wrote to us saying the previous study circle helped her to focus more on her spiritual sadhana. And then she added that when she had a bhajan session in her house recently, a Muslim doctor came for that session. And in the speech that this doctor gave in the end, he said that when it rains, some drops fall on the river while some on the land. The ones which fall on the river are fortunate as they quickly proceed towards their destination of reaching the ocean. And it is the same with all of us who have received the blessing of Swami's teachings. We are those lucky drops which are on course towards our goal. Yes, dear listeners, we are indeed extremely fortunate to have known Bhagwan, to be touched by His love and to be awakened by His messages. It is to aid us to keep up this momentum of our journey towards Him that we have these sessions of Radio Sai Study Circle. And now it's time for me to request Mr. Rangarajan to begin this session. As always, apart from me, Bishu and Rangarajan sir, there are three other brothers from the university, Amey Deshpande, Sai Giridhar and K.M. Ganesh. A warm welcome to all of you brothers and to sir. Over now to you, sir.
Thank you, Bishu. We, in a way, are continuing the study circle that we had last time on SOS, Swami on Sadhana. And if you really see, the ultimate goal of all spiritual practice, for that matter, is realization of Godhood, realization of divinity, or realization of truth, because the three are not different. Now, what is this truth? This is what we are going to discover or investigate today, again using analogies and stories from Bhagwan's message. Truth is very profound, but Swami says yet very simple. And for that matter, he categorizes truth into three different levels. One is Nijam, one is Satyam, and one is Ritam. Nijam is the empirical truth, what we see. Vishu, you are wearing white shirt today. So it's true for today, but you may go home and then change over to your night clothes. Now that may be a different color. So it's wearing a white shirt is not true at that point of time. So Swami says this is only temporary relative truth, which is the empirical truth.
Like a fact.
It's like facts, yes.
It changes.
Yes, but it changes. The next level, Swami says, is Satyam, which is the spiritual truth, which does not change over the three periods of time, whether it is past, present or future. For example, take the earlier age of Dwapara Yuga. Man was born even then. Man died even then. There was hunger even then. There was thirst even then. These are all truths which are not temporary or factual in that sense, but they are constant over a very long period
of
time.
Like the sunrise and the sunset.
Exactly. And the highest level of truth, Bhagwan says, is Ritam, which is the absolute truth, which is beyond time and space. And it is that truth that sadhana is really supposed to take us to.
To understand that truth is not
easy. So you know what a challenging study circle it is today. We are talking of something which even the great saints and sages perhaps did penance for thousands of years. And today we are able to talk about it only because of the way in which Swami has put it across to us so simple, so pithily, in beautiful stories and analogies. For example, just to start with, he says, when a child is sick and the mother wants to give some medicine to the child, you know, the child doesn't like something bitter, so it says, no, mommy, I don't want the medicine. So what does the mom do? Swami says a very beautiful trick. She says, okay, what do you want? And the child says, I'll have a banana. So what the mother does is, she scoops out a bit of the banana and inserts the bitter medicine into it, gives it to the child, and the child is so happy, oh, mommy gave me a banana. But truly speaking, her hidden agenda was fulfilled as she had delivered the medicine to the child. Swami says, that is what Swami does. He gives us things and we feel so happy Swami has given us what He wants, or rather what we want, but truly speaking, Swami has actually delivered the medicine to us. So that is what
I
all
give
the
you what you want, so yes, that you may want what
ultimately,
I want to
ultimately you may ask for what Swami has really come to give. So that is going to be the way in which we are going to handle this. So to start with, what is this Ritam, this most profound truth? How do we even try to grasp it? Ganesh, can you throw some light on this?
I would say that even before we try to understand what truth is,
we should be clear as to what is the motive of trying to understand the truth. Why are we, you know, what is the actual purpose? Why should we do it?
Yeah.
Why?
True.
So one of the most basic and fundamental need of any human being is happiness.
Yes.
He has, and if he wants permanent happiness, he better start attaching himself to permanent things. For example, Swami gives the example of a silver tumbler. He has shown many times in discourse, see, what are you looking at? We say immediately that, Swami, this is a tumbler. Then Swami says, this is a tumbler. Tumbler is a form. But what sustains this tumbler? It is the silver. It is the padartha, the substance which sustains the form. Padartha is the substance. Form is the rupa. So, the rupa is subject to change. So, generally, when we look at the outside world, we look with the external vision. We look only at the form, which is subject to change. And anything which is subject to change can be a cause for sorrow. So if we are able to attach ourselves to things which are permanent around
us. So you are saying we should focus on the silver in the tumbler and not the form of the tumbler.
Not on the form. Similarly, we should try to see the cause. We should see try to attach ourselves to the more fundamental cause than the outward expression of the effect. So that way we'll be less, you know, subject to, or we'll be less vulnerable to the vagaries of the changes which we are subject to.
So you look at the silver and not at it as a tumbler.
Not as a tumbler.
That's very difficult, right?
Difficult. Yeah, we really need to discuss that a little more on this.
Training. That's what training sadhana is all about. Yeah.
As Ganesh rightly said, the purpose has to be understood, why we are doing this whole exercise. One thing which Swami says often is, be clear and the rest will follow. And this whole endeavor that we are, you know, getting into right now is to have a better clarity of what is the end goal of the sadhana which we are all into. If we have greater clarity, it helps us in proceeding on the path of sadhana more easily that way. And to make things simple for us, Swami gives a beautiful example of the screen, a movie show. You know, for a movie show, we have a huge white screen on which the movie is projected. How many of us, when we go to a movie theater, concentrate on the screen?
You don't even realize there's a screen.
I mean, why would we even look at the screen?
Yeah, why would anybody look at the screen? But then that is what happens, Bhagavan says.
But that's the basis.
To all of us in our day-to-day life, the whole world, the whole creation, Bhagavan says, is like a movie show which is happening on the screen, which is Brahman or Atman or divinity. You know, Swami says that the Upanishads declare Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, right? Swami gives this particular example of the screen and the movie to substantiate what this truth really means. And he says Brahma Satyam is like the white screen on which this movie, which is Mithya, is projected. Even if we look at it very scientifically, what we see as a movie where, you know, a lot of activity is happening, you have rivers flowing, you've got fire, you've got that and this, so many scenes, so many people talking to each other,
emotion,
all that
action,
emotion, action, everything happening on the screen,
photons.
But they are just play of light, isn't
of
it?
Light.
It is an optical illusion.
And it does so much to us.
But it makes so much meaning to us.
Incidentally, Albert Einstein had mentioned that this whole world is an optical illusion.
Exactly. So, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya is really like this movie show, where the screen is the basis of this movie show. Can you imagine a projection of a movie without the screen?
It's light.
Just light.
Light particle.
It's just light particle, which will not make any sense to you. But only when there is the basis of the screen, can you see the whole movie and enjoy it. In the same way, it is only with the basis of divinity or Atman or Brahman that this whole creation makes sense at all. So,
amazing.
In a sense, Jagat Mithya is this play of light.
Amazing. Actually, that reminds me of two things, Giridhar. One is, in my 11th class, when I was studying in the Sri Satyasai Higher Secondary School, we had done an exhibition wherein we had taken excerpts of Bhagwan's discourses and made models, and we requested Bhagwan to come. And incidentally, the part of the discourse that came to me was exactly this. Brahmam Satya Jagat Mithya, and the example that Bhagwan gives of the screen and the movie. So I had made a model wherein I had a screen and I had a small motor on which there were different small idols of statues. You know, they were rotating and Bhagwan came, pressed on that button, and all these man, woman and kid started rotating and all that. And Swami is very happy looking at it. You know, when you mentioned all this, you know, that just flashed my mind how Bhagwan has, you know, in his own way, he was trying to inculcate all this even when we are so young. But the most important thing, as you mentioned, how the screen is the substratum, which is the most important thing for the images to appear.
And without which the image will not even exist.
Will not be there. And what comes to my mind is how Bhagwan explained this in a very different way. Swami said spirituality is not divorced from anything in this world. Everything is spirituality. Even mathematics is spirituality, but it's very different when you talk of mathematics and spirituality. Swami said in simple arithmetic you understand 3 minus 1 is equal to 2, but in spiritual mathematics it is very different. Swami says it is 3 minus 1 is equal to 1. And then he goes on to explain how. Swami says, take a person, a viewer. He is looking at himself on the mirror. So now if you see, there are three objects. The viewer, object 1, his reflection on the mirror, object 2, and the mirror itself, which is object 3. And now Swami says, you take away the mirror. So what happens? 3 minus 1 now actually becomes just 1. Because only the person is there. There is no reflection, there is no image. And Swami says, the mirror is actually prakriti. It is the nature. The reflection of God that you see on the mirror is the jivatma, are all these individuals that we see in this world. So we are all actually just reflections, and we exist because there is a prakriti, and we exist only because there is a God or the viewer which is there. So ultimately he is the one which is the only thing that is present, and everything is there only because of him. Without him there is no reflection, but you know, we don't exist without him, but he can exist without us.
In fact, in Bible it is said that God created man in his own image.
Oh yeah.
So probably this is exactly what it means.
Yeah. And to just continue this understanding of this screen and the movie story, the screen, as Bhagwan says, remains as a witness. Now the Upanishads have given a very good analogy to communicate this whole idea of being a witness. It talks of two birds perched on two branches of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
There's a higher branch, there's a bird sitting there which is very calm, still, steady, absolutely no restlessness, and is just watching continuously. Another bird, which is actually its own image, which is on a lower branch. And this bird on the lower branch is, you know, full of activity, you know, moving around, looking around, jumping, hopping. So the Upanishads compare this bird on the lower branch to the actual individual who is caught up in this Maya and is all the time running around in the world, doing this, doing that. Whereas the self, the true Atman, is the bird on the upper branch, which is constantly watching, absolutely still. That, Swami says, is the real truth, which the sadhana makes you realize that I am truly that, but have got caught up in this sort of... So it's very tough. I mean, what do you say? I mean, you know, all this is nice to speak about, but can one really hold on or comprehend or understand this truth?
Yeah, in fact, Swami gives another very beautiful example is, when you start walking on this path in pursuit of truth, you know, Swami gives this Brahma with Brahmaiva Bhavati. The knower of Brahman, or the one who's trying to know Brahma, once he comes to know Brahma, he becomes Brahma. And Swami gives the example of the salt doll. There was a small little doll, salt doll, which thought, let me try to understand the gauge, the depth of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started, you know, its journey. And it went, you know, down and down and down. And even as it was going down, it kept dissolving in the ocean. And finally, the moment it realized what the ocean is all about, it had become the ocean.
It no longer exists.
No longer exists.
By the time you know it, you're not there.
You're not there.
And you are not there, and yet you are there everywhere. You are everything.
Oh, yes. You become part of that whole.
Most people get scared of losing their identity in this journey.
Yes.
Just like the salt doll.
Yes.
But the truth is, you gain a much grander identity.
You identify yourself
with the entire creation itself.
That is the whole game all about.
Yeah, that is the truth.
Yeah, but okay, at least you have had some, you made some beginning somewhere, but it's really so tough to believe this, because the world is so real. That's what Bhagwan says, the world is so real. Here's a mic, I touch it, it's so real. Here is Amai, you know, you look so real. How can you say this is unreal?
Play of photons.
This is nice on paper, nice to talk. But very difficult to really comprehend it in real life. That is why Bhagwan, really, it's so beautiful the way he communicates. He says, yes. Therefore, don't say this is asat. Don't say that this is not true, because it has relative truth.
Yes.
For the time being, when you are encaptured in this illusion, it is true. But remember, it is really not true. So he said, neither is it Sat, nor is it Asat. And therefore, Bhagwan says, the scriptures use, have coined a new term for this relative truth, which is called Sadasat. He said, this creation is Sadasat, means it is neither true, nor it is untrue. It depends upon what state of mind you are in.
Okay.
So what is this that makes it hang around between these two extremes of truth and untruth? This is illusion. Because it's not there, yet it is there.
Yes.
Because once you know it, it's not there. But so long as you don't know it, it's there. So it's so funny. So that's why ancients coined a term, which again is a very elusive term. They said it is illusion. Maya. Maya means that which is not there, but you think it is there. So I think we should spend some time on what this Maya or this illusion is really all about.
So it is beautiful that you said, you know, that this whole world is true for us as long as we believe it is there. And the moment we dwell into the truth and suddenly it just vanishes for the realized being. There is a beautiful example which Bhagwan gives, in fact a small story. Swami says that it was twilight in the evening and a man was walking on the road. The light was very dim over there. Suddenly he sees something and he thinks it is a snake and he starts panicking. Out of fear he shouts, "It's snake, snake," and all that. And from the opposite side, there is a man, a wise man, who is walking with a lantern in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
What he does is, he comes near and he throws some light on the object, which this man perceived to be a snake. And, you know, he was fear-struck and, you know, all the panic and everything was a result of him assuming it to be a snake. But the moment light was thrown on the object, he saw that it was just a piece of rope.
It's happened many times, you know, for all of us.
Which he misunderstood to be a snake due to lack of light. And Bhagwan uses this simple, beautiful analogy to explain the effect of this delusion. He says, in the effect of illusion, Maya, or ignorance, or darkness, Swami says that we misunderstand this world to be a reality, just like how the snake was accepted to be a reality at that point, and all our emotions, our feelings, our reactions are based on that truth which we believe in, like the man believed that it was a snake. But moment there is light brought into our life, wisdom brought into our life by the Guru, what happens is we begin to see that it is not a snake and it is a rope. That is the truth behind what it really is. And moment the man came to know that it is a rope and not a snake, all the fear, anxiety seemed to just evaporate in a moment, and he laughed at himself.
Yes.
Right? So Swami says, this is the effect of Maya or delusion, which makes us see that which is not there to be the truth.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And you know, Swami puts it so nicely. He says, what was there before also was the rope. What is there now is also the rope. What is going to be is also the rope. So what went and came was only our perception that it was a snake.
What we see here is the nature deluding you. But Swami gives one more example where we are deluding ourselves. He gives the example of the sun and the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, all of us have experienced when during the sunset or sunrise, when the sun is near the horizon, when we are looking at the sun, if we are facing the sun, what we see is a light. And naturally the shadow will be behind us.
Yeah.
Most of us choose to turn away from the sun and we keep looking at the shadow. The shadow here represents the delusion, delusionary aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Swami gives a solution to get rid of delusion is so simple. Just look towards the sun. Turn yourself towards the light. Automatically you get rid of delusion. Not only that, when the sun is right above our head, which symbolizes illumination, the shadow is completely gone. It's neither behind us, around, nowhere it is. It is gone. It is surrendered right under our feet. So that is the choice that we have to make in terms of getting rid of delusion.
So until we are enlightened that way, we need to walk in the direction of
keep looking, keep orienting towards the sun.
I'm reminded of a couple of years back, I think it was in 2009, when we had our Sai Sannidhi Day.
Yes.
In September, and Swami had come into the bhajan hall and he asked us, you know, what are the, any questions? And after a brief silence, you know, someone asked Swami the question, Swami, how do we control the mind? And you know, Swami went on to give this very beautiful analogy, which is so wonderful. He says, just imagine there is a house of mirrors and a dog enters into the house.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the dog enters, it sees 1,000 dogs, that is its own reflection, and a dog gets panicked. Okay, he starts to wonder from where did all these dogs come. And what the dog does is, in its stupidity, it starts to bark. And what happens? The 1,000 dogs looking back at it also bark. And it thinks that, oh my God, I am in trouble. And so it goes and actually scratches. He says, okay, let me take one dog at a time.
Yeah.
So he goes and scratches. That mirror breaks into 100 pieces. And
oh
now from
God.
That one piece, 100 more dogs come and it's barking back. And he says, that is the stupidity of the dog. Eventually the dog runs away. He says, you know, imagine if a human being enters, it immediately recognizes, identifies that, oh, this is all its reflection. And then he is able to correct himself, his hair, his dress, he is able to correct himself. Similarly, Swami said,
you mean he corrects himself all the
images? Yeah.
So he uses the reflection to correct himself. Eventually he becomes corrected.
Yes.
So Swami compares this, compared that what we actually think, our mind, or is just a projection, and this whole world is like this house of mirrors. A wise person will use the world, this projection, to correct himself.
Correct himself.
And know what are the mistakes in him. And that is a delusion that we need to overcome, that it is not, the world is not against us. In fact, the world is out there to help us.
We can make best use of it.
And if we correct ourselves, the world automatically gets corrected.
So is that why Swami says that everything around us is a reflection of the inner being?
Correct. Reaction, reflection,
reaction and resound. That actually reminds me of yet one more very unique story Bhagwan says is about a dog.
Yes.
You know, he says...
Another dog story.
Yeah, another dog story. You know, Swami uses this very practical examples. You go to a house and they have a pet dog, and you know how it is these days. The dog will be barking at you. So he says, now if you want to get into the house, what is the way out? The dog is very fierce. It's an Alsatian dog and looks so,
scary.
Scary. So he says, there are two ways you can get into the house. One is you have to somehow pet the dog. Now, actually compares the dog to Maya or illusion.
Yes.
And he says, the master is God. Now, if you want to cross Maya and reach God, one way is you tame the dog. You give it some cookies and make it, feel very happy, or, pat it.
Yes.
But, you're playing with fire, because any moment it could bite you. So it's not a very safe way. But if you could do it, yes, that's one way. The dog will allow you to go in. But he says that's very difficult. He says the very easier way is just call out to the master.
Yes.
Oh, master, oh, Rama, oh, Krishna. And once, but you have to call out very loudly, because the master is there upstairs.
Yes.
He says, but if the master hears you, if you call out from your heart, he will come down all the way. He will actually tie the dog and then take you inside, catching him with your own hands. So he says, that is the easy way to get over this, so-called illusion or Maya.
In fact, as you mentioned about calling, it what comes to my mind is, our bhajans are like that, right? You're calling out to the Lord, O Rama, O Krishna.
Oh, Amay, I remember that, in one of the other occasions I had heard Amay singing a bhajan very nicely, actually, through the bhajan he was depicting this episode. Can you do that for us once again?
Yeah, when actually I heard this in 1996, Swami was saying this master, and there's one bhajan which captures this whole sentiment, the way I understand it. So the bhajan is something like, I'll take you through the bhajan. So
let's imagine the whole scene.
Yeah, so there's this huge mansion and you're at the gate, and then there's this Alsatian or Doberman dog which is barking at you. And you just start, Krishna, Shri Hari Krishna, Krishna, Shri Hari Krishna, oh Krishna, Krishna, Govinda, Gopala, Krishna, Krishna. It's like, a prayer, oh Govinda, oh Gopala,
leading,
please come down, take me in. And this dog is not relenting. It is barking. Wow, it's giving its this thing. So you are getting scared. So it, Nandamukunda Govinda, Navanita Chora Gopala. And then the dog is almost, it's charging towards you.
Yeah.
Govinda Gopala, Gokula Nandana Govinda, Krishna Shri Hari, Krishna, Krishna Shri Sai Krishna. And then Krishna comes over. Swami comes
running
and
down.
Kya chahiye? Kya? What is your problem? Please come down.
Beautiful.
Well,
that's
wonderful.
A very nice.
In fact, as we are talking about this Maya and delusion, I am reminded of how, at various points in our life, we see so many facets of this delusion in our lives. And one facet is this desires. Now, Swami says that if you are feeling thirsty, if you drink salt water, ocean water, what happens is actually it doesn't quench your thirst, it quenches your thirst temporarily. It actually increases your thirst. You drink more salt water, and it's a never-ending process.
So that is what Swami says is how our lives are in this world, because the salt water is like the worldly objects, the material possessions that we want. And Swami gives another beautiful example. Swami says, suppose a house is on fire, you know, what would you do? You would immediately run, you know, to find ways and means of putting off that fire. But what actually happens, Swami says, is very different. There is actually a fire inside us which is devouring us, destroying us every day. And instead of trying to putting off that fire of desires, we are actually feeding that, without realizing that it's actually, eventually, we think it is giving us warmth, but it's actually destroying us.
That is the fire of desire?
The fire of desire. The fire of desire. Another illusion that has to be controlled, that has to be subdued, so that we can get over this maya.
The whole problem with this tackling the delusion is, fundamentally our approach itself is wrong. We are not trying to find where the fundamental problem is. For example, in the drinking water, ocean salt water, the salt is the problem. Okay. Similarly, suppose we are in a room which is dark, okay, and we are continuously trying to rearrange the furniture so that we can move freely, and we find that repeatedly we are bumping into the furniture. This furniture, you can say, our possessions, our the people
various
in our
obstacles
life, various situation in our life.
Yeah.
We are trying to change the situation, but the problem continues. Some people are stuck with the same pattern for many, many years. They don't sit back and think why it is happening repeatedly. Mm-hmm. The problem is not the furniture. The problem is that the room is dark. The solution is to put on the light.
Mm. Yes.
So that because light is not there,
yeah,
the problem is there. So that's where we have to focus.
And once you put on the light, without changing any of these situations or circumstances, you can maneuver yourself.
Correct.
In the world, that's
in fact, the world will be as it is.
As it is,
we can so still find our way to God.
In fact, this putting on this light takes me to another example that Bhagavan used to give in his discourses. Swami says that many times you think that this, we are in this deluded world, and you know, we can never really get over this. We might take years and years of spiritual sadhana to get over this. But Swami says, no, it actually can be done in a flash. And Swami gives a beautiful example. Swami says, imagine you are in your home and you are sleeping. You are asleep in the night and you wake up at 1:30. And you visit the washroom and you come back and sleep again. Now it is 1:35. And now you drift into a dream. And in the dream, you see that you have grown up, you have gotten a good education, you have got a nice career, a house and a family, your son has grown up, your son is playing with his friends, and suddenly something hurts the son and the son starts crying. And because the son starts crying, you wake up with a start. Okay? And you look at the time now. It is 1:40 a.m. So Swami says, in the dream state, what would have taken 40 years for you to experience in the normal physical state, you just experience that in 5 minutes.
Different time dimension.
Yeah, it's a different dimension. So Swami says, can you say that it is not possible? It is very much possible. What you would have experienced in the physical world in 40 years, you have experienced the same thing in 5 minutes in a dream state. And Swami says, there is another state called the Turiya state, which transcends the dream state. And so, what can happen there in a flash of a second, you do not know. Because the spiritual illumination comes from God, who is also like the Turiya state beyond time and space. And then Swami gives this example of putting on the switch. Swami says, suppose a person is the owner of a house, and suddenly he gets this call to go abroad. So now, he locks up his house and goes overseas. After 10 years, he comes back, opens the house, and puts on the light. Now that room, which was dark for 10 long years, in a flash of a second, is full of light. So you cannot say this is not possible.
It doesn't take 10 years for the light to come.
Yes, and Swami says, that can very much happen, because all you need is, in spiritual sadhana, the enlightenment can happen in a second. All you need is that concentrated, that switch, that main switch is our intensity, our concentrated focus on God. Once you have that, once that switch is on, it can happen anytime, because God too is beyond time and space, and all the and the experience of enlightenment also comes from God, which is beyond reason, season, time and space.
In fact, as you rightly said, in our scriptures, it is said that it is the Atman which decides, who should realize. So
whom to reveal itself to.
Whom to reveal itself to. There is a very clear reason for that. Bhagavan says in Bhagavad Gita that this Maya, which actually thinks that you are different from me, makes you think that you are different from me, is my own. He says, Mama Maya.
Mm-hmm.
My Maya.
Self-created.
It is self-created. It is in fact part of himself. And that is why it is his choice to choose, you know, to kind of remove it also at his will. And our duty is to please him so that he removes that Maya for us. In fact, Swami gives this analogy of this fisherman. Mm-hmm. And Swami says that the fisherman, you know, throws his net in order to catch fish. So if the fish should not get caught up in the net which the fisherman has just thrown, what is the solution for that? Means, how does the fish escape the net? The Swami gives a very beautiful solution to that. He says, see, when a fisherman throws his net, he will never throw it right below himself, that is at his feet. He will throw it away from him.
Yes.
So Swami says the best place, the safest place for a fish is at the feet of the fisherman.
Okay.
That's lovely.
Right? So when the divine fisherman throws his net of Maya or of illusion, of delusion, the best place for us to be safe,
hold on,
is to hold on to his lotus feet.
His feet.
To be at the lotus feet of the divine fisherman.
And in fact, that is what is echoed in the very first bhajan that Swami gave to mankind. Manasa bhajane guru charanam dustara bhavasa gagaram. If you catch hold of the feet of the Lord, you will cross the ocean.
Fantastic.
I am reminded of yet another analogy that Swami gives when understanding this truth. Is this ocean foam and the wave, and Swami uses, you know, when we were all little children in primary school, he used words like Vyavaharika, Pratibhasika and Paramarthika in the summer course discourses, and it used to be bonkers for us. But eventually now, you know, we have kind of understood that Swami compares, you know, that this world to the ocean, the Brahman to the ocean, sorry. And he says that the foam, which is like the physical manifestation of the bubbles that we see, is one type of existence, which is Vyavaharika, which has got its own form.
Okay.
Okay. But the foam thinks that it is actually different. The moment the foam starts to feel that it is different, I have my own existence, etc., you know, the ocean tells that, boss, you have come from me only.
Yes.
Right? Similarly, the other one is the Pratibhasika, which is the wave, which is not a different form, but temporarily has a different existence of its own. Again, the wave should not think that I exist on my own, because it is nothing but a different form of the ocean. And then you have the Paramarthika, which is the fundamental cause, as Ganesh was putting it, the cause and the effect. So this is how we should understand that we fundamentally are the ocean. Temporarily, we have taken up these forms, which could be the form of the foam or the
wave. In fact, Swami compares the ocean to the higher self, the wave to the mind, and the foam to the body. So we have to give up the body and the mind and realize that we are really the ocean. Water.
Correct.
Amazing.
Well, I think we have had a great discussion on this very tough topic of illusion or Maya. And the funny part of Maya, Bhagwan says, is, as Giridhar pointed out, it is self-created. You know, it's like cataract which grows in the eye and covers the eye itself. Or Swami says it's like moss which grows out of water but covers the water itself. So it is truly self-created. And, you know, we have discussed several examples to illustrate this. We talked of the rope and the snake, which is a very profound example Adi Shankaracharya has given, and Swami has mentioned that so many times. We talked of sun and shadow, the dog and the house of mirror, and also the getting into the house where there is a dog and you call out to the master. And as you said, it's like drinking the salt water which makes us more and more thirsty. Or like Ganesh mentioned, arrange, you know, furniture arranged in various patterns and you're trying to maneuver through it. Or about your example of switching on the light and you get the light in a minute. And also holding on to the feet of the fisherman to escape being caught in the net. Or Amay's example of the wave, the foam and the ocean. And maybe to sum up, just one more small analogy is of the dog, which Swami always says when it bites a bone, keeps on chewing it. It so happens that its own gums start bleeding.
Yes.
And the dog takes so much pleasure that, you know, it's actually a dry bone and it relishes the blood coming out, least realizing that it is drinking its own blood.
At its own cost.
So it's all a matter of perception, how you look at things. As I read a beautiful thought which says, you don't look at things the way they are, you look at things the way you are.
You are.
Because you're projecting your thoughts and ideas on the things. So the first thing I need, you know, we need to do, Swami says, to overcome this Maya illusion is change your vision. It's a paradigm shift. And as Ganesh said, you know, you're not looking at the sun, you're looking the other way around. So from looking outside, we need to look inside.
Drishti.
So now let us spend some time exactly, Vishu, in talking about this drishti. Srishti lo dosham ledu, drishti lo dosham undi. Swami says the mistake is in the vision, not in creation. So Giri, how do we make this paradigm shift from looking outside to looking inside?
In fact, sir, we had a beautiful experience in Chennai when one of our brothers asked Bhagwan, Swami, akarshana niki moola karanam endi.
You mean akarshana?
Akarshana means attraction. In fact, we know that one of the major forces of Maya is attraction. That is, you start differentiating things, you start liking certain things, disliking certain things. You're attracted towards certain things, not attracted towards it. So this boy asked Swami, what is the root cause of attraction? Swami just took a moment and gave a one-word answer, and he said, drishti. Then he said, Srishti lo lopam em ledu bangaru, drishti lo ne lopam undi. Which means, there is no defect with the srishti or nature, because nature is divine. But it is only in the perception, in our drishti, in our vision, that there is some mistake. For example, Swami gives this analogy of the musk deer. Musk deer runs all over the forest in search of what? Can anybody guess here?
Fragrance.
The fragrance.
The fragrance. And the fragrance is called the musk fragrance.
The kasturi.
Kasturi deer. Runs around all over the forest in search of a beautiful fragrance, which we all call musk because it emanates from itself. Not knowing that that fragrance comes from within the deer think it is somewhere outside in the forest, and it goes running around all over the forest in search of where this beautiful fragrance is coming from.
It has to make that effort to look inside.
Yeah, so that is the difference, Swami says. We should not be like the musk deer. The fragrance of divinity, of divine love is coming from within us.
It need not be in temples and pilgrim centers.
In fact, Swami gives a very, very simple analogy, and I'm sure it happens to many of us. Swami says that, you know, a person is looking here and all over the house, he's looking for his specs. And then, you know, he keeps, you know, where did you keep my specs? Where did you keep my... It happens in my house very, very often with my father. And eventually, someone has to say, Father, you are wearing those specs. And then he figures out, I'm sorry. Or, you know, it'll be kept in the head.
The problem with the modern intellectual, rational scientist is they say that whatever we see, we can... Only if we are able to perceive it, then only we can believe that it exists.
Empirically,
that's what. Now, if you look at the field of medical science, the latest medical science, though MRI scans and other things are there, but a lot of treatment is dependent on diagnostic level. Yeah. You see a symptom, it's a diagnosis is done by symptomatic treatment. You see a symptom, and based on the symptom, you say this may be the cause. Now, the cause is not seen directly. Yes. You see the symptom and then you diagnose the problem. So here, the same medical profession, you're not looking at the cause directly, but you're able to...
In certain cases.
Or if you take the example of cosmology, one of the most interesting object in the space is black hole. I'm sure all of you would have heard of it. Black hole is a high density matter. The gravity is so intense that not even the light can escape it. And how do the cosmologists, how do they identify that black hole is there? They're not able to see the black hole directly. But the moment they see the light is bending in a particular region of space, they say, okay, that is a region where black hole is there. So even modern science, they don't go purely based on what they can see directly, but on implied way, on certain observations, which implies that there's something which exists.
Yes.
So to straight away say that when we talk about spirituality, or when we talk about spirit and other things, to put it down that, okay, just because we are not able to perceive it, it doesn't exist, it is not scientific. Because the same scientists, they are accepting certain things which...
Correct.
So you're talking about perception.
Perception. More than perception, it is arriving at a truth. Okay, just purely based on what you're able to see. But you're able to arrive at truth even if you're not able to perceive the truth directly. You know, the things which implies, which are pointers to the truth, towards the truth.
Yeah, the other thing, like, you know, what we are not able to see is, for example, a garland. Swami gives the example of a garland. Yes. And Swami says that what we can see is the flowers and beautiful flowers. But what we are not able to see is the thread which is actually holding all these flowers together. Can you say that, you know, that because I'm not able to see the thread doesn't exist?
Yes.
You cannot say that, right? But it is actually the thread. And in fact, Swami calls this as the Brahma Sutra. The sutra is the thread, and it's the Brahman which is actually holding all this. So what we can see is the world, but what is actually connecting the entire world is this unseen thread. That is another example that Swami gives. So again, we need to change our vision from what is outside to what is the fundamental nature, the antarbhuta.
Just like the silver and the glass, going back again to our earlier example.
In fact, as Amay, you narrate this, one story that comes to my mind is from the Upanishads. And it is the story of Astavakra. Many may be familiar. You know, it concerns King Janaka and his court. King Janaka, who's repeatedly appears in our ancient scriptures, he was very keen to know the ultimate truth. So he called all the scholars of Vedic texts to his court, and they had this assembly, and he wanted to learn about this ultimate truth. And as this discussion was going on, suddenly into this court walks a man. And as soon as he walks, everyone in the assembly, they start laughing. And why is it so? Because this man is made very funnily. This man, when he walks, his body bends in 8 places.
That's why the word Ashtavakra.
Ashtavakra, yes. Vakra is bent and Ashta is 8. And the most interesting thing is, when the whole assembly is laughing, this man, he starts laughing even more louder. He roars in laughter. And now King Janaka is surprised. He said, man, why are you laughing? And then this man says, O king, I am surprised. It is a pity that you have called this assembly of these erudite scholars to your court, and you are trying to understand the search for the ultimate truth from a group of cobblers.
Cobblers.
And Janaka cannot take that. He actually gets very infuriated. I mean, no one has ever told his group of scholars as cobblers. He says, I mean, justify your statement. What are you saying? And then he says, all this group of enlightened, so-called enlightened men, when I walked into the court, just like a cobbler who only sees the leather, they saw me only as a bag of flesh, bone and skin.
That is his outer.
He said, they could not see me as that spirit, as that glorious effulgent Atma that I am. They only saw me as a leather. So obviously, they are just cobblers. And it's a really pity that you're trying to learn about the spirit and the ultimate.
In a sense, all of us are cobblers.
Very true, because we're so used to this outwardly vision. No, we look at the body and make judgments and all our likes, dislikes. In fact, but the problem is that there is a great challenge in trying to see what is within. And I think God has, it's a conscious design of creation that all these obstacles and challenges are put because it shouldn't be very easy to see inside. Otherwise, we all would have been realized souls, you know, just in a moment. In fact, he gives the example of the orange fruit. Mm-hmm. And Bhagavan says, you see an orange fruit, there is sweet juice inside, but there is this bitter skin outside. And most of the time we spend our lives, I'm sure you'll all agree, cribbing, crying, making so many accusations at God. Why did not God do this? Why am I the most sad man in this world? Why did I not get these sort of, you know, privileges in this world? But the problem is, this is like the bitter skin. And Swami says, unless you remove this bitter skin, how can you taste the sweet juice inside?
Yes.
So once again, it comes back to the same thing. How can we turn our vision, overcoming all these challenges and obstacles in creation, which are like the bitter skin of the orange? But only when you do that, you can taste the sweet juice, which is the wisdom of the higher self.
Just have to peel out.
Yeah, looks, I mean, sounds as simple as that, but yes. You know how tough it is.
First karma yoga, then you enjoy the jnana yoga. Very tasty.
In fact, I'm reminded of a beautiful experience, sir, in Kodaikanal. Swami was giving watches, which are very characteristic of each Kodaikanal trip, had a unique watch, a gift from Bhagwan to his students. And Swami never misses out a single opportunity to teach us the highest of truths through simplest of things. And here was this watch, an HMT watch, which Bhagwan was giving. And he showed it to all of us and said, who all want this watch?
Mm-hmm.
And then he explained, see, this is a golden watch. not only is it a golden watch, see carefully, there is Swami inside it. Mm-hmm. There was a beautiful image of Bhagwan inside the watch. So Swami was pointing to that and he was saying, he said, who all want this watch? And of course, all of us raise our hands. But he wouldn't give it to us so easily. There was a major lesson coming through this gift of his. And Bhagwan then said, look, how is this watch packed? You know, these HMT watches come in beautiful box. Packaging. Yeah, those hard boxes, hard cases. Yeah. It was a beautiful case. And Swami said, see how beautiful and strong this case is. And he tapped the case. And then he opened it to reveal a transparent polythene cover in which the watch was packed. And he said, see, inside this beautiful, hard, strong case, there is this transparent polythene cover. And inside that cover is this golden watch, and inside that golden watch is Swami.
Wow.
Right? Then he said, this hard and strong case is your body. Inside that is this transparent, beautiful polythene cover, which is your mind. And inside the mind, that is deeper within,
yes,
is the golden heart, which is the watch.
Okay.
Beautiful. You know, your heart, which is the residence of God, a golden spiritual heart, which is the watch. And inside the golden spiritual heart is present Bhagwan. And Swami is saying, how many of you want this?
So close and yet so far.
Right? So then Swami said, how many of you are interested in this heart case? How many of you are interested in this polythene cover? None of you, isn't it? All of you want only this golden watch and Swami inside. In the same way in your life too, Swami said, body is important, mind is important, but you have to dwell deeper within to find this golden heart in which Swami resides. So Swami said, this is the watch that you must aspire for.
Swami is all the while prompting us
to turn in,
develop antardrishti.
Yes.
One more example that Swami has given quite often. We have seen hundreds of bulbs in Kulwanthal, Sai Kulwanthal.
Yeah.
And many times Swami has told, see, so many bulbs are there, but it is the same current which is electrifying this all the bulbs. In fact, one more deeper understanding that we have to understand is when many devotees, you know, they say, if it is the same divinity which is there inside all of us, then why is it that the same divinity is not manifesting in the same level of intensity through all? Means we all know we are at a different level of, if the same cause is there which is supporting us.
Yeah.
One analogy which comes very close to is that the same electricity is there, but we know there is a zero bulb, there is a 40 watt bulb, there is a 60 watt bulb, there is a 1000 watt halogen. Okay, so now that is the choice that we have in terms of the more we intensify our sadhana, the more of the divinity
we manifest.
Again, what is sadhana? Swami is chitta shuddhi. The more purification you, the more the divinity you are allowing it to express out of you. So you start from a zero bulb and you go up till the halogen. Many people throughout their life, they choose to be a zero bulb. Okay, now that you cannot blame, the person cannot blame the divinity for that.
Yes.
It is not the mistake of divinity. You have to allow it to express through you.
Some people reach 60 watt and they are happy with the illumination that they are providing. Right?
That is one more problem.
Yes.
Wonderful. I think we have really spent a lot of time in discussing about turning the vision inwards.
Inward.
In fact, as we are talking about turning the vision inwards, one definition of life that someone said comes to my mind. Someone very beautifully made an acronym of the word life and said, look inside for everything.
Oh, beautiful.
L-I-F-E. In fact, we can go on dwelling on this, but I think, sir, we have to move on.
Yeah, so it's wonderful. We have spent a lot of time in discussing about this turning the vision inwards. We talked of the musk deer, which mistakenly runs around the forest. We talked of, Amai said, all the time you're wearing your spectacles, but looking around for that, or the black holes, the bulb and electricity example, the garland of flowers and the Brahma Sutra, the Ashtavakra story, which Bishu mentioned, and also the orange, the bitter skin and the sweet juice inside. Ultimately, I think that's why Swami says he is Sai, S-A-I, which, he himself has said, see always inside. The truth is that. And that is why avatars always gave messages which were, in a sense, cryptic. And he also said the reason why he does that is because he wants us to go within and search for its real meaning. Because always what he said was not very simple to grasp. One had to really do a lot of introspection and find out the truth. The reason was, again, a prompting to go within. The only way to perhaps turn inwards is, as we discussed even earlier, the outside world is so tempting. Giridhar talked about attraction or akarshana. It is so attractive that it's so difficult to give up this pull of the mind towards external objects. Unless we develop some sort of detachment towards these external objects, I don't think the mind will even think of moving inwards. It's like a car going at full speed in one direction. Swami says if you have to take a 180 degree turn, you just cannot do it immediately. First you have to press the brake, you have to bring it to a manageable speed, and then maneuver the car through a 180 degree turn. So the same way, we have to stop this mind's reckless, you know, attraction towards external objects, calm it down, steady it, and then make a, you know, sweep U-turn. So let's talk about detachment. How do we go about developing this detachment?
In fact, Swami gives a completely, you know, different understanding, and in fact, only Swami can do it. Oftentimes, you know, you've seen him in the discourses, you know, he says, see, detachment is so simple.
So simple.
Chala easy. Chala sudarungam. And Swami
so nice to hear that.
His handkerchief and says, see, I'm holding the handkerchief, and now if I want to leave it, what do I do? Just open the palm, and you know, Swami opens the palm, and it falls, and we think, wow, that is how easy detachment is. In fact, that is what, in one of the discourses, Swami said, for my boys, for my students, detachment is that easy. And in fact, I was sitting in that discourse, and I was wondering, Swami, what are you expecting from us? I mean, that is the, when we say we are Swami students or we are Sai students, that is the student that we need to
that is our followers of Bhagavan's teachings.
Exactly.
Swami has told a number of times that those who practice my message, they are my true students.
In fact, Swami always says that he's always made a difference between college students and Sai students. Everybody cannot be a Satyasai Institute of Higher Learning student, but everybody can be a Sai student.
Now this process of detachment that we are talking about, it should not be out of reluctance. It should be very natural. I mean, many people try to, you know, leave something and because
forcibly
that is not detachment.
It becomes counterproductive.
As I was saying, the car has to be slowed down slowly. That slowing down is a process of introspection, the vichara, which actually brings in a change, a lot of change inside us, and that. Swami has given an example, is the example of a detachment. It should be like a ripe fruit. When it gets ripened, when the right time comes, it falls on its own. In fact, the great mantra, the Mrityunjaya mantra, Trayambakam Vijayamahe Sugandhim Pustivardhanam Uruvarukam Bandhanam Mrityor Mukshyam Amrutam. Just like a ripe cucumber drops on its own from the creeper.
Effortlessly.
Similarly, the devotee prays that he should be
detached
from the
death. In fact, Swami says how it can be done, and gives the example of the tadpole. Swami says, when you get angry, for example, what happens? Your face becomes red and becomes ugly and so on. Okay, it's like that red light that you see blinking on top of a vehicle, you know, when there is an emergency, when there is a lot of panic. Swami says, similarly, when you know that there is a red button pressed, that is the time you have to control. You have to control your anger. Similarly, Swami says, be it anger, be it envy, be it greed, the moment we realize that we are into those moments, we have to control them. We have to subdue them. And then Swami gives this example of tadpole. And Swami says, this tadpole has a tail when it's growing. And as it grows, eventually, the tail falls off. You cannot actually forcibly cut the tail of the tadpole. If you do that, it'll actually die.
Correct.
So similarly, Swami says, as you develop wisdom, as you develop this intensity for God, all these other things which arise out of ego, the ego, Swami likens here to the tail of the tadpole. Just like the tail of the tadpole falls away, as it grows, similarly, when we grow in wisdom, when we grow in our spiritual pursuit, in our spiritual intensity, our ego also falls off. And when the ego slowly starts falling off, your anger, your attachment, your envy, your hatred, everything eventually falls. I mean, that is one of the ways that Swami says how we can cultivate this detachment.
In fact, it's really not as tough as it seems. Swami again gives a beautiful story. He says, take the principal of a college. So long as he's the principal, you know, he's the custodian of all the assets, and he's so particular about the furniture, the rooms, the laboratory, the equipments. But what happens on the day he retires? Swami says he just leaves the entire college within, you know, just a minute, doesn't take anything with him. Or take the example of a cashier in a bank. So long as he's a cashier, you know, he's counting all the notes as though it is his own notes, but all the time he knows it is not really his money.
Yes.
So same way Swami says, why are we getting so attached to things in our life, though we know at the end of it when we leave, We leave with nothing in our hands. If only we could develop this sort of, you know, understanding these analogies and trying to translate it into our own life, if we can start developing this sense of detachment,
there will be less sorrow in our lives.
Less sorrow, less pain, and more of happiness in life.
In fact, this is the most fascinating thing in the world. In Mahabharata, it is said that during the Yaksha Prashna, that is the Yaksha, when he asks questions to Dharmaraja, that is Yudhishthira, one of the questions is, what is the most wonderful or fascinating things about life, about the world? And Yudhishthira says that the most fascinating thing is, every day hundreds and thousands of people die. And we witness all those deaths. We know that so many people die, yet we walk away thinking that all about my life is permanent, and yes, all things that I enjoy and that I possess,
it cannot happen to me.
It cannot happen to me. While we see thousands of people dying every day. So he says that is the most fascinating thing. And Swami says that in this kind of a practice of detachment, we have to be careful about something called Smashana Vairagya. Smashana Vairagya means that you walk
is
up.
Is it the symmetry detachment? Is the translation?
Yeah,
symmetry.
Symmetry
detachment.
Symmetry detachment is a literal translation of Smashana Vairagya. But it typically means, if anybody has gone for a ceremony after death,
funeral,
what happens is, at that moment, you get all those thoughts of detachment,
exactly,
of the impermanency of the world, yes, of this person being there just few minutes before and now he is not there and all that. And the moment you turn away from the funeral ground and walk back to your residence,
yeah, everything comes back.
All that, you know, noble and elevated feelings seem to sublimate into nothingness.
Yes.
And that is what Swami says.
My television and stock price and
yes,
no,
yeah,
profit.
My uncle actually cracks a joke about this kind of a vairagya. He says there is Smashana Vairagya, there is also a Prayana Vairagya. You know, it's about, you know, taking up this task of practicing detachment. We need to be hard on that task, because what happens is, just like if we are on a train journey, we find that certain amenities which are basic, you know, requirements in a train journey are not provided, or some vendor cheats you. You know, you take 101 resolutions that I am going to file this complaint at the railway station. As soon as I get down, I am going to complain about this vendor, about this service not being provided and all that. Moment your destination comes, you simply get down from the train and walk back home without doing any of these things, right? So there is Smashana Vairagya and there is Prayana Vairagya.
Journey detachment.
Journey detachment. So we need to be, you know, away from both these kind of Vairagyas and look for the true detachment which Bhagwan asks us to.
I think that gives us a lot of clarity about this whole idea of detachment, which would in turn help us to turn our vision inwards, therefore overcome illusion and thus understand the truth. But the simplest way is, Bhagwan always gives a mantra. If you find all this difficult, he says, pray to God. In fact, he has said that detachment, attachment, we discussed this in the last study circle, is like a seesaw.
Yes.
He said, if you find it difficult to detach yourself from the world, better get attached to God. And like one side of the seesaw goes down and the other one goes up, automatically you get attached to God. I think we should really now wind up this whole discussion. Maybe narrating few simple tips. Fine, we know this is the truth. There is this illusion. We have to get over the illusion by turning within. For that, some amount of detachment is required. Now, can you all give simple tips which Bhagwan gives, which once again, you know, is in the direction of understanding the truth and then overcoming illusion.
And practicing.
And practicing above all. Giri, why don't we start with you, Gildar?
Sir, I had once prayed to Bhagwan when I got a chance to help me with understanding as to what kind of a sadhana I should do.
Yes.
I said, Swami, Maya's, one of the major, what is a manifestation of Maya is ego. Ahankara,
yes.
Swami says. So I asked Swami, how to get rid of this ego? Swami, I remember, beautifully leant back on his chair with his hand on his cheek. And then he smiled and he said, where is ego? So I said, Swami, ego is in the mind. Swami said, remove the mind, it will go away. So he said, Swami, but how to remove the mind? Swami said, chala sulabham, very easy. He said, pointing to his own physical body, Swami said, I am not this body. I am not this mind. Where is the place for I? I still didn't understand that Swami is asking me to practice that. And I said, Swami, but for that, what sadhana I should do? He said, go and sit in your seat. And it is only later that I understood what Swami says. Swami often tells us that this is my body. This is my mind. Just like This is my watch. This is my pen. My watch means watch is separate from me. My pen means pen is separate from me. My body, body is separate from me. My mind, mind is separate from me. Then who am I? Swami said, continuously inquire into this. This inquiry itself is sadhana. To tell yourself continuously that I am not this body, I am not this mind, where is the place for I?
That is interesting. I think that is what Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi also used to advise all the people, the devotees who came to him, constantly keep inquiring, who am I? But you know, when we look at life and when we look at the journey of so many people on the spiritual path, there are many times when you really feel disheartened. You get disheartened because, you know, am I really progressing? Have I done enough progress? And is all my spiritual effort bearing fruit? And, you know, Swami says that we should never ever get disheartened when we are on the spiritual path. In fact, in the previous study circle, Amaya said that we are on the plane. We are on the plane. And so...
And the pilot is God.
And the pilot is God. So we are definitely progressing. And the other example that Swami gives is, you know, when a fan is rotating, you just put off the fan, the blades of the fan do not just stop
instantaneously.
You know, they keep rotating till there's a bit of power left. So similarly, I think it's the same with all of us. We have taken that decision to put off this delusion or put off a detachment, you know, reduce our ego, but it does take time, just like the blades of the fan are slowly coming to a full stop. I think all our the tendencies which are taking us away from God are slowly coming, and we have to keep on making those efforts, and the results will definitely
patience,
come.
Patience.
Yeah, patience.
Before you stop the fan completely, I'm reminded of one more example which Swami has given,
yes,
which is connected with fan. It's about guna dynamics. It's like gunas. We know there's sattva guna, rajo guna, and tamo guna, and Swami equates all these gunas with one blade of the fan. And many of us think that tamoguna is very bad, rajoguna is bad, sattvaguna is the best. That's many of us think. But actually Swami explains that all three gunas, they are equally important in their own place. It is just that we have to maintain a proper balance. Even time, for example, Swami is told, the entire 24 hours has been divided into 8, 8, 8 hours. Morning 4 o'clock to morning 8 o'clock and evening 4 to night 8 o'clock is that period of sattva. That's when we go for temples and we do our puja, sandhya vandanam, you know. Morning 8 o'clock to evening 4 o'clock is a time of intense activity where rajoguna should take over. Where rajoguna actually helps you perform your day-to-day
tasks.
Perform your job. Night 8 o'clock to morning 4 o'clock is a time of tamoguna. Where we take rest, we go for sleep.
Yes.
Even nature is having its balance. Yes. So if we are in harmony with the nature, then we are actually, we'll be more happy, more peaceful. So we should not be judgmental saying tamoguna is bad and rajoguna is bad and sattva is good. But there's one more way of looking at the same gunas, is one which Swami says is, in terms of obscuring the reality, the true self that we are, how different gunas plays differently. For example, Swami equates the tamoguna with the coat, the rajoguna with the shirt, and the sattoguna with the banyan. So first thing you have to remove is the coat, then you're removing the tamoguna, then you remove the shirt, that is the rajoguna, then the banyan is there, the sattvaguna. Once you remove that, then you are able to do the sakshatkara of the divinity, which is in a, you know, analogical way. You can see yourself.
Very true. And Swami always mentions that you have to transcend all the three gunas.
He
says, tamas may be like a metal chain, rajas may be like a copper chain, sattva may be like a gold chain, but it is still a chain. So he gives two options. One is, he says, the soham way to get over, or the dasoham way to get over. Soham is, you say, I am God, I am God, I am God, and become so huge, you envelop and encompass the whole universe. That is one way to reach God. The other one is dasoham. That is, I am your slave, I am your servant, master. You become so small that you can just squeeze out of the shackles of the world. These are the two approaches Bhagwan gives. One of these definitely will work with each one.
Actually, I am reminded of one very interesting episode which one of our professors had told. You know, oftentimes we expect that spirituality is extremely difficult and very complicated, and if someone like Bhagwan comes and just tells us that love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never, this is the, you know,
mantra,
the mool mantra of your life, I have a tendency to think is that, no, Spirituality cannot be so simple.
Yes. Should be a very big mantra.
Yeah, it should be like, you know, Om, Haim, Kreem.
It should be a concoction of
all
Vedas.
Yeah.
Syllables. Something which we cannot chant, only that we believe is, you know, because you're not able to chant it. And it seems it so happened that once in the Institute Auditorium, Swami was giving a discourse and suddenly Swami declared, I am today going to reveal the ultimate mantra. And, you know, the moment that happens, everybody's back straightened up and, you know, ears became sharp, attention absolutely onto Swami. And Swami said, if you repeat this particular mantra, you will be able to understand the ultimate truths and you will realize who you are. And so everybody wanted to know that. And, you know, I have never given this to mankind. And today, he, you know, Swami also made it build up and all that. And, you know, it was a perfect place to happen. You know, Swami students in the Institute Auditorium, with all, you know, those who are close to Bhagavan, etc., whom we think. And then Swami says, the mantra is, Nenu Pashu Kadu. I am not an animal. And the moment he said that, our sir was telling, all of us sunk into our seats, because we had heard that mantra.
So
and we were wondering, Swami, no, this cannot be so simple.
At all.
And then Swami says, it is not all. And once again, all the back straightened up. And Swami said, the entire mantra is, Nenu Pashu Kadu, Nenu Manishi. That is, I am a human being. This is the mantra that we have to chant. And somehow, we just don't take it, we don't take our Lord seriously. You know, how can it be so simple, Swami? And in fact, this is the mantra that we have to chant every single day if we are able to remind ourselves, I am not an animal, I am man. I am not an animal, I am man. That itself is, you know, that is a sadhana that he prescribes to us.
In fact, as we just discussed some time back, it is his maya. Swami says it is mama maya, it is his maya. And the only way to get rid of it is to please him. And all we need to do is to have implicit obedience for whatever Bhagavan says, which is utmost, you know, the primary requirement for a devotee or a disciple. And we might wonder, how can it be so simple? You know, spirituality, Atman looks like an ocean ahead of us, which we cannot comprehend at all. But Swami says, in order for us to taste the ocean, we need not drink the whole ocean. A drop of the ocean,
yes,
will give us the same experience in terms of quality as drinking the whole ocean.
Exactly.
Right? So Swami says that it is as simple as that. It might not
need
be
to
easy.
Pursue that one drop, need not pursue the entire.
Yeah, you need not pursue the
just entire. Always focus your attention only on God. Keep away, as Ganesh said, keep your face the sun so that the shadow is behind. And I remember in Kodaikanal in 99, you know, when Swami was giving this photo session to all of us during one of those sessions with Bhagwan, as Bhagwan was standing, you know, each one of us used to come stand next to Bhagwan, pose for the picture and then go back to our place. So Swami was standing, and this one after another, you know, different brothers came, stood next to Bhagwan and went back, everyone smiling very beautifully for that memorable picture with Swami. But even as this was happening, you know, suddenly Swami said, Chudu, Nenu Okkate permanent. I am the only one which is permanent. All of you are coming and so going, nice. Coming and going.
Swami never loses an opportunity.
Never loses an opportunity to teach us a lesson. Wonderful. And you know, that it's such a simple way Swami is conveying to us, what is the most permanent thing in this life and where our attention and our focus should be.
If you are tuned to our higher self, Swami within, then even the world, the way the world reflects upon us is different. For example, Swami gives a beautiful, when we say Shantakaram Bhujaga Shayanam, that image of Lord Vishnu sleeping on that Adishesha. Now if you see the Bhavasagara is there, okay, if you are seeing the world only, if you see a snake, obviously, what is the first reaction? You run away, okay? But Shantakaram, look at Vishnu, Shantakaram, blissfully, is bliss. Bhujaga Shayanam, and the same snake is, Bhujaga is snake, Shayanam, it is, Vishnu is sleeping on the snake, and it is giving a rest,
sheltering
him. So if we are tuned with our higher self, that is how we, I mean, this is the image basically conveys a message that, this is how a human being should live, in absolute peace and equanimity, even in the midst of the world.
Just like the tongue and the teeth.
Yeah. And in fact, I think this is where the role of a guru, and that's why we are so lucky to have the Lord as our guru, comes. And there's a small paragraph in Sacharitra, in Shirdi Sai Sacharitra, which explains this, that when we are crossing this jungle of existence, of this world, either we can use the Jnana Marga, which is, you know, to find out everything about the jungle and find our way through, etc., etc. Or the simplest way is, imagine a person who has already, you know, gone past this forest. He comes and becomes our guide. And he knows all the pitfalls, and he knows all the shortcuts, and he knows all the, you know, the exact direction to go past this. And he comes and says, why don't you join me? And we, all we need to do is then hold his hand, and he takes us across this jungle. And I think that is one more thing we need to do, is to hold the hand of this Lord, yes, who is ready to take us across this. That is the only sadhana that we need to do.
We have Sadhguru as our Guru.
Exactly.
Yeah. And which means the one who created this jungle itself, yes, is our Guru. So yeah,
and
he knows
and it. That is why Swami says, you don't need to deserve me. You just need to need me. Just need me. See, Swami, I am yours.
You need me, you
I
deserve
need you,
me.
Swami.
I need you, Swami. He gives his hand, we hold it, and he is able to, I mean, he simply takes us across without any problems.
And that God is wisdom. Wisdom and God are not different. That's why Swami says, have wisdom, rest is taken care of. Have God, rest is taken care of. Going back to Dharmavahini, Swami gives one more story, that if you have to walk through the same jungle, going back to a jungle example, lots of thorny bushes and, you know, creepers on the way. So what would you do now to keep your feet safe? Swami says, you cannot remove all the thorns from the surface of the earth and to make the entire earth smooth so that you can go safely. He says, simple solution, don't bother about all that, just wear your footwear. Now, it may sound like a very funny example, but Bhagavan says that footwear is like wisdom. Going back to the furniture example, you had to just put on the light to maneuver through the furniture. Here Swami says, just wearing footwear is like having wisdom. You can walk on the same thorns and it is not going to really prick you. So ultimately, understanding truth, as we discussed about today, is all about seeking God and this wisdom dawning on us. And Bhagavan says, wisdom is not something which you can acquire. Wisdom has to come on its own. As Giridhar said, it is maya. Illusion is self-created. Wisdom is self-bestowed. So the Atman or the higher self or Bhagavan within us has to bless us with that wisdom. It's not something you can get, but it is something for which you can aspire and put in effort for. And Bhagavan says, ultimately, it's like mist. You know, many times you have gone out, when there is thick fog or mist, you can't see anything. And suddenly when the sun shines, you know, in one glimpse you see, oh my God, all that is there in front. So Bhagavan says, that's how realization comes, that in a flash of a second, oh, that's it. It's as simple as that. So let's pray to Bhagavan that we, first of all, using all these tips, we are able to overcome this attachment to the world, develop some sense of detachment so that we can turn our vision inwards. From the Bahya Drishti, we go to the Antar Drishti, see always inside. And that should help us to overcome Maya or this very, you know, mysterious illusion, so that ultimately we understand the profound truth, truth which is so profound, but yet so simple. And Swami says it's as easy as crushing the petal of a rose.
Yes.
So let's pray to Bhagavan that we are able to...
And eventually, like the salt turl, we become one with the ocean.
Yes.
And then we know that we are the ocean. There is no salt.
There is nothing more left to describe or comprehend.
And that ocean is love.
Yes. And just as it is described in the Vedas, yato vacho nivartanti aprapya no manasa sad. Though in fact all of us have right now sat and we have tried to describe that.
The very fact we have described is we have not known it.
We have not known it. Because the moment you try to describe it, you will know that it is not this, it is not that, it is not that.
In fact, when I mentioned about that example of putting on the switch, Swami says in that discourse, what is that main switch by which, you know, your focused attention on God gives you that flash of enlightenment? Swami says, it's ultimately love in that discourse. Okay. In fact, sometime back when someone asked Bhagavan, Swami, why this creation? Why did it come about? And Swami then paused for a while and very sweetly he said, love ho sakta hai.
Maybe it is love.
It is love.
Beautiful.
Shall we close with a prayer?
Yes. We will do the Shanti Mantra.
Yeah, we will, or we could even chant this Asatoma, because we want to go from untruth.
Exactly,
to
that's oh, the yes. most apt prayer for yes. today. Let's yes. chant the Asatoma.
Asatoma Sargamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityurma Amritam Gamaya.
O God, lead me from untruth to truth, from darkness to light, and from mortality to immortality. Peace, peace, peace.
Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
So that was a session of Radio Sai Study Circle. We hope you found this session insightful and useful, dear listeners. Please do send us your feedback on this program by writing, as always, to listener@radiosai.org. And before you wind up this Thursday live broadcast, let me take this opportunity to share with you that today a new product called Sai Touch was launched in the Sai Blossom store, the store located just in front of the Radio Sai office. And through this product, you can now listen to Radio Sai with much greater ease than ever before. It is a customized tablet only to listen to Radio Sai. Apart from the Radio Sai streams, it also has plenty of other preloaded audio and video content on Bhagwan. So it's a device to connect to the divine hamlet of Prashanti Nilayam, to connect to Swami's voice, to the Prashanti Mandir bhajans, and everything that we do in Radio Sai. Please do inform your family and friends about this, especially those who would like to listen to Radio Sai but are not familiar or comfortable using a computer or a laptop to do the same, or even a smartphone. It is a very, very easy and convenient device to listen to Radio Sai programs. Let us spread the message of love. Let us make every medium available to communicate this message of love, and at the same time, let us not lose any more time in our lives in instilling this practice of love in our hearts, in our words, in our actions, in our thoughts. With this, dear listeners, it's time for me to take leave of you and draw the curtains on this lovely Thursday live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. It's almost 10:15 now. I'm Team Radio Sai. I wish you, today's session is late because we had the Ugadi celebrations in the Mandir. So we started our session in the evening, half an hour than the usual time. So that is how the program we should have concluded at 9:45 is now, is going on, and it is 10:15 now. I hope you liked what we have offered on this day of Ugadi. Thank you so much for being with us. And finally, on behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, loving Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Even as I sign off, you will listen to a gratitude program presented by the students passing out of the Prashanti Nilayam campus on 7th March 2010. As I take leave, you will continue to listen to the love expressed with the students of Bhagwan. Keep listening. Let us lose ourselves in His love. Thank you. Sai Ram.